A little bit different show this week for you, as Sally and I were able to spend a little time together out in Mankato, Minnesota, at a conference sponsored by the Christ in Media Institute of Bethany Lutheran College. We had a great time, talked to some interesting people, and we want to share those interviews with you this week. All that and more coming up next. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, the Wells Tech podcast for Tuesday, October 23rd, 2012. This is episode 259, and you've joined a podcast that talks about technology and ministry and where those two meet, and we're happy that you joined us once again. Helping me do that, as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I'm coming out of the fog here in Sleepy Eye.
Yeah, fog here too.
Kind of an eerie morning in October, ready for, I guess, a pretty major change in our weather, but yep. We spent some beautiful days together recently in Minnesota at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, talking about where technology meets ministry. It was an exciting conference called the Media Outreach and World Missions Conference, sponsored by the Christ in Media Institute there at Bethany. And I'm very excited about today's show. It's a little bit different kind of show, but we're hopefully going to bring that conference home to all our Wells Techers.
Yep. And that's one thing that we kind of look for now as we do our, you know, little travels or whatever, is look for opportunities to talk to interesting people that are doing interesting things in ministry and technology. And we definitely found those, and it was not hard to grab a few interviews with people doing interesting things. And a couple of the people that we have on the show this week, we've talked about in the past, Pastor Paul Hartman and Dr. John Lorenz. And again, they had some great things to share. Maybe we should talk a little bit about the format of the conference to get our listeners a little bit up to speed on how that all worked, because that was kind of interesting too.
It was interesting. The conference was kind of framed around seven discussion topics related to media and ministry, and they had a panel of leaders in different areas to facilitate those discussion topics. And so if you're looking at the video portion of the show, you can see a photo with all the different leaders. And as we work through things like cultural issues or adult discipleship kind of issues or stewardship issues or whatever the discussion topic was at that time, then a selection of the leaders kind of got things started, kicked off the discussion. And then it was pretty much open to everyone who was in attendance to contribute their ideas or ask questions of the leaders. It was a little bit free form.
Mm-hmm. The concept that I really liked was, you know, we had the reactions to the questions or the challenges, as they called them, right away before the conference, you know, a number of weeks before the conference, and everybody was encouraged to look at those and come with their thoughts and ideas and questions. And the goal of the whole conference was to come out the other end with some action items, some things that we can maybe collaborate on, things that we can work on together to further the advancement of the gospel in mission fields using media. And I would say, while this is a technology show, we also cover media type topics, and there was a good breadth of different topics. So the challenges that were maybe suggested at the beginning of the beginning of the conference were, I think there were, so I want to say seven.
There were.
Yeah. Cultural was the first one. And then we jumped into technological, which I really enjoyed, of course. Then creative, which was also very interesting. And each of the panelists had, you know, different expertises, if you want to say that, in an area. And they were asked to maybe introduce things and then moderate the discussion. Legal, political, teaching. And then finally, stewardship, and then finally, discipleship. So there was something for everybody.
Definitely. And they did a really great job of using social media to spread the word. They published those challenges and the written up experiences of the panelists prior to, so you could get those, and we can actually include a link in the show notes to the challenges and the thoughts around those. They had a Tumblr page where they kind of blogged the whole weekend and tied in tweets about the weekend using a particular hashtag and that kind of thing. They also have a Facebook page. So I noticed on their Tumblr page, they already have posted summaries of each of those sessions. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in reading about the discussion that came out of each of those seven sessions, you can go there and read about that on the Tumblr page. Yep.
So I think from our listeners' perspective, Sally, there's a couple of reasons maybe why this would be of interest to them. One is just a general interest in the spread of the gospel worldwide. That's certainly all something that's on all of our hearts to reach as many as possible, and especially in areas where, you know, they, as we heard, you know, had very little opportunity to hear the gospel, or were hearing it for the first time from us, which was, you know, really, really great stories that were shared at the conference. But also, I think there's application in almost all of these areas for us, you know, stateside doing mission work as well. There are basic techniques, tools, approaches that just make sense wherever you are.
Lots of discussion about collaborating and using the cloud and using open source kind of concepts where people collaborate around the world on open source software, taking and applying that to doing mission work. So just really exciting if you're a techie and know about how to make some of those kind of things happen. But there was a whole other side that was focused on as well, not just the techie side, but the right brain creative content kind of side. And what we heard over and over again was we need those right brain people. We need to develop right brain thinking, because content is really where it's at. We can figure out the technology, but without great content, we're not going to get very far.
Right. So, Sally, we should probably jump into the interviews then. We did three interviews, as I mentioned, and the first interview that we're going to play here is an interview with Pastor Paul Hartman, who is at Multilanguage Publications in El Paso, Texas. And they and you know, our technology group have a very close relationship, because a lot of the things that we're doing or they're doing involve technology, as they're trying to get the written word out in as many languages as possible. And obviously digital techniques are the way to do that at this point, whether it be a website or some other digital mean. So we work very closely with them. So it was good to see Paul, and should say Gonzalo Degadillo was there as well, although we did not interview Gonzalo because he was one of the panelists. And so we work closely with both of them. And Paul had some interesting things to say, especially about discipleship and how a person comes from a state of unbelief to belief and then growing in that belief, which is adult discipleship. So let's play that interview we had with Paul Hartman.
Great. We're happy to have joining us today on the podcast Pastor Paul Hartman from Multilanguage Publications in El Paso, Texas, and we've all joined together in Mankato, Minnesota at Bethany Lutheran College for Christ in Media Conference. And Paul, you were involved. You were asked to speak, actually, here, or react to a number of challenges that that the conference threw out there. One of them was adult discipleship. So maybe we ought to define what we're talking about in the context of Christ in media and adult discipleship. So what's your understanding of the topic?
Well, we mean mean following Jesus Christ as our Savior. So a person comes to hear about Jesus Christ and comes to believe in Jesus. Then the person would need to grow in his understanding of what the gospel is and what it means for him in his life. He becomes a follower of Jesus Christ, a disciple. And so adult discipleship is providing instruction to help people grow in their understanding of Christ and following Christ as their Savior.
So in the context of a media conference, what are the big questions associated with, you know, making a disciple, getting an adult to know Jesus Christ? Where's the media part of that? What's the question?
Well, it started with printed materials. we use materials that originally came from the prison ministry in our church body. The prison ministry has reached out to perhaps 80,000 prisoners, if I recall the number accurately. It's a very large ministry in the United States. And they were doing this with self-study materials written for adults who do not have much knowledge of the Bible and who do not read well at a high level. And they, interestingly, used material that came from missionaries of our same fellowship and developed that into prison ministry booklets. A grant that hadn't been used became available, and so we chose to work with prison ministry to adapt their materials to what we call the Bible Teachings Series. There are now 26 titles in that series at two different levels. These materials have been translated into, I think it's 12 different languages, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And there are over 700,000, maybe 750,000 copies in print and largely in distribution. And so this material has been used in various places in cross-cultural ministries, most notably in Nepal and in Pakistan and in Latin America. Collectively, among those three areas, about 60,000 people have gone through at least one of the Bible Teaching Series books and taken the test and passed it at the end of the book. And so we have a way to track people's growth through this material. It's led to the creation of a church body in Western Nepal. It's led to a small confessional Lutheran congregation in Pakistan, and it's actually helped to create a congregation or two in Latin America. Well, now imagine reaching that many people, and it grows continually. 10,000 people additionally have participated in that those various places this year. You have to reprint books, you have to print new books, you have to create more titles. It costs a great deal. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to ship materials across countries. In some places, like Nepal, and for all practical purposes in Pakistan, it's illegal to do that. In other places, it's very difficult to ship materials, and it's very expensive. Why not do this digitally? And that's a fascinating idea. Now, one obvious approach would be use the internet. Problem is, now, you would know this better than I, and but I'm my study of brief reading on the internet indicates that perhaps only 40% of the population in Latin America uses the internet, and that in all of Asia, when you include the underdeveloped areas, the percentage may only be about 25%. And when you get to Africa, by the way, it would be maybe half of that. Mm-hmm. So the internet is an interesting way to reach people, but it's limited. We're thinking of a portable teaching center, if I may. Take something like an iPad, connect it perhaps to a camera, a projector, and then be able to show the material to small groups. That's kind of a neat idea. Right. So then if you, Josie or people he works with in Nepal, instead of carrying huge sacks of books up to a bus and then or after getting off the bus, going up the mountainside, can you imagine that? Give them something like this or a little portable camera so they could show the same material in an interactive way digitally. That's kind of cool.
I know Pastor Degadillo has been involved in a lot of outreach electronically as well, and grown congregations, per se, over the internet, and done a lot of video connections with them, maybe via Skype or whatever. I guess one challenge I would see in adult discipleship is where do you go from there when you're disconnected from each other in a physical sense? How do you administer the sacraments in those kind of settings and things like that?
So how do you build a community?
Exactly.
Yeah. You've mentioned social media. going. It's an interesting thing that years ago we had a problem with distributing Spanish materials. We were producing it and then storing it. And so he showed, of course, the problem to Gonzalo when he joined our program. Well, Gonzalo is a people person, par excellence, and he's really interested in getting to know people. So when we challenged him with the distance learning program, and he learned about Facebook, he just glommed right onto that, mm-hmm. and I can't imagine how many contacts he has. And he's continually talking to people by Facebook or on the telephone and so forth. He's had people call him from the Andes on their cell phone. And so then that led to an obvious need for worship. And so worship, well, let's just get together on Skype. So they have a Skype conference. It's simple. It's not at the level of technology we should have, but it works now. We need to build on that and make it smoother. But they have contacts all over the world who speak Spanish, who are isolated and cannot be served easily by local congregation. And so that builds the community you're describing.
Mm-hmm. So, Paul, in multi-language publications, now you have the challenge to take all the great content you have and get it in here and then get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do that?
With your help. Because
you've taken some steps, even with hiring personnel, right?
Yeah, and in the first place, we have been working digitally for years.
Right.
The first thing is to get good digital content, and you can't imagine how many mistakes we can make in one volume of the People's Bible in Spanish. If there are 400, is it possible there are 400,000 bytes in a book? I think that's right.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that would be 400,000 possible mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make 1% mistake rate, which would be excellent, you'd get an A, just think how many mistakes you'd have. So if you can produce that material digitally, you can fix, and you can fix, and you can adapt. So digital, translating digitally and producing the digital content is something we've been doing for 20 years or more. And we've been able to save those files. And now with your wonderful help in Connect to organize that information, as difficult as it is to work with the SharePoint technology in Connect, it is critical that we manage those files. Secondly, manage the process of the tasks, who's going to do what.
Mm-hmm.
So technology services has been extremely helpful. And we've been privileged by our church body now to hire someone who can talk more intelligently with you. I'm just a parish pastor. But Sylvia Falcone has the technical background and ability, plus a love for the gospel and a sense for cross-cultural work to work as our go-between. To work with you and to work with the content mm-hmm. and the fields.
Okay. One last question. One exciting thing coming up, at least in my mind, and I think as far as this conference would be concerned, is the Asia Lutheran Translators Conference coming up in Hong Kong. What's the primary goal of getting all those people together to talk about translating?
In a word, networking.
Mm-hmm.
If they get to know each other, they can help each other. That's critical. There are two big messages we want to get across to these people. There will be about, I believe, 27 people from Asian people from various countries who will be participating in this conference. And altogether, there will be 66 people there. You, for example, will be there. One of the messages is when you translate, you must have a target audience in mind. You have to adapt the material to work for the needs of that particular audience. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
The second is the management of the process and the information. And that's where you'll participate in this conference in teaching us the value of Connect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Paul, blessings on the rest of the conference. I look forward to the discipleship portion, which is, I think, tomorrow, to learn a little bit more about what maybe all the participants think about taking people from that you know, that stage of early Christianity through that discipleship process. Thanks again.
And thank you for your service for World Missions and Technology Services.
Our pleasure.
Our thanks to Paul. Very insightful as usual. You could tell he's got a passion to share that gospel, especially with the work of multi-language publications, Sally.
What a blessing to have him in that role and leading that effort and all of his staff. We also got to meet Sylvia Falcone, who's who's taking on more roles with multi-language publication as well. So great, great opportunity to connect with them.
Okay. Then, Sally, we should maybe jump right into the next interview, which was equally as interesting and somebody we've had on the show at least a couple times before. Dr. John Lorenz, who has been all over the world, and he definitely has the mission field experience. He currently heads the Asia Lutheran Seminary in Hong Kong, and we wanted to speak specifically to him about the cultural challenge or the cultural aspects that come into play when you're trying to reach out with the gospel in a field that perhaps you're not very familiar with. And there's certainly application here for us in the States, too, with a lot of the cross-cultural activities that are going on. All of us, are having to deal with those kinds of things, regardless of where we are, whether it be Hispanic or Hmong or whatever it is. And there needs to be a sensitivity to the cultural differences, and Dr. Lorenz shares that with us in this particular interview.
Happy to have with us Dr. John Lorenz from Asia Lutheran Seminary joining us here in Mankato, Minnesota for the Christ in Media Conference. And John, you were asked to be on a panel this morning talking about culture. And that's obviously very appropriate when we're talking about Christ in media as we're trying to spread the gospel to the entire world. And you have a lot of experience in different cultures. What are your impressions so far of the conference and maybe your part in it?
Well, you bring a lot of interesting people together with a lot of different backgrounds who are going to have some synergy.
The culture part is particularly interesting because everybody comes at it from a little bit different angle. You have stories, and we hear Terry Schultz with stories from Haiti, and all from American ears, very different experiences than maybe what we're used to in this culture. How does that play into sharing the gospel? Why do we talk about culture at all?
Because our life experiences shape us. I love to say this in Asia, we didn't choose our parents. It's one of the fundamental truths of the Bible that God gives us our parents. And because we have our parents, we look the way we do. Because they probably had a very large role in raising us, we think the way we do. And one of the problems about being a human being from the point of view of God's Word is that we were born with a fascination with ourselves and the things that we like and the things we want to do. And we would just as soon associate with people who are like ourselves. Mm-hmm. So you encounter someone who is gifted with a different set of parents, well, you're going to have a little bit of conflict.
Right, right.
Yeah, this Mississippi girl was feeling the cultural differences as I listened to you guys talk. I heard President Wendland from the seminary speak once, and he talked about being in different cultures and realizing over time that it was like playing by a different rule book. Everybody has a different rule book. Would you say that's a good way to characterize it?
Everybody has certain rules that can be both positive or negative. It's very charming. I love to listen to British people. I think the King's English is superior to the American. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But on the other hand, you get to know those people and you find out that there are common denominators. We're all human beings. We all have the same basic weaknesses. Culture is comfort, too. We go back to see family at holidays. We go to the haunts that shaped our childhood, the backdrops. If it's mountains, it's mountains. If it's the southern Mississippi, it's going to be, that's home. That's also a blessing from God when we have Christ in our life. Because then we know that we can be ourselves without feeling that we have to have something extra, or fight the world, or fight someone else because we feel they're threatening us, et cetera, et cetera.
So as you're thinking about sharing the gospel in different cultures, you were asked to respond in written form. And you talked about culture being a good thing.
Yes.
And culture being maybe a bad thing, depending on...
If it's about me, and it's really centered in me, it can be very bad. Ugly American is a term that we have probably heard in our culture, and it's true. There are some times when we feel superior to other ones. I think one of the funniest things to do when you're talking with people and you don't know their language is you start shouting at them. Because you think if you're a little bit louder, somehow the force of your voice is going to make them understand. That doesn't work.
In any culture.
No, you've got to listen.
Right.
You have to watch. You have to observe. And you will find the humanity coming through finally, the common humanity. God made us all. But then also you will find the hurt. And culture can sometimes be a facade. It can be thrown up to protect. And you don't, that's why we don't make friends immediately. You have to spend time with people. And when you go to another culture, it's even more accentuated. It's more difficult.
Right.
One of the challenges I think that's come out in the discussions I've heard so far is about content. We have great content. We have God's Word, which is the best content. And so it would be nice to wave a magic wand and make all that content fit all these cultures. But what kind of challenges do you face in different cultures as you try to share that content?
Well, first of all, there may not be a common knowledge bank that you draw from. I'm in the Asian culture. I went through 30 years of schooling, and I honestly could say I didn't have a single class in Chinese history or philosophy. That's a huge gap. And because I had so much education, there's a real trap that you say, they ought to think the way I do. They ought to approach the major issues that face all people the same way. Well, they don't. And if it's about me, then it's not about Christ. If it's about Christ, then we have something in common from which we can grow and appreciate that I would come there. And I've had Chinese say, why are you here? You could do something else somewhere else. Why spend time with us? And I said, because the love of Christ compels me. They think about that. It's very important. On the other hand, I constantly try to understand why they do the things that they do. And at the same time, I constantly examine, why do I do the things that I do? And you find out that what we have in common is far more important than what separates us. That's a process. It's not immediate.
Right. We in the Wells are in a bunch of different countries, and we're dealing with a bunch of different cultures. One of the things that you encouraged the group here when we met earlier was you have to learn the culture. Yeah. And that takes time. So in your experience, I assume you had to spend a lot of time just, like you say, listening and learning. Is that something that probably should suggest we should just dig in and focus, or for the sake of the gospel, spread out as broad as we can?
Most of my life I've been in education, in our Wells education, and I'm a great believer that the earlier you start, the better off you are. Youngsters should be exposed to people who are different. Take trips with your parents if you can. When you're in that beautiful time of college, when you get certain breaks, do travel. Learn another language. Language is a mirror to the soul. And every language has its own way of describing the way life unfolds. So when you go as an adult into a new culture, you need to make friends and have those friends take you to those festivals, those events, those rites of passage, which for them defines who they are. You may find you don't understand an awful lot of it, but then in the dialogue that you have, you begin to understand, oh, that's the way you do That's why you do the things you do, et cetera, you know, on and on.
I was interested in the story you told about teaching Hebrew to the Chinese, and I thought that was a great story. I was hoping you could share a little bit of that with us.
Well, I think it came in the context of what someone else said about how the Bible is so rich in stories. And of the Bible, Jesus, of course, was a great storyteller, a parable teller. And he was, let's not forget, he was a Hebrew boy. He was a son of David. He was from the whole heritage of the Jewish people. And the Old Testament is full of stories. And what you find out is that the farther you go back in history, the more commonality you have across cultures. The Chinese, after studying Hebrew with me, would say, oh my goodness, those people were really, they're Chinese. Mm-hmm. What they meant is that we have a common heritage. And the modern world has been so layered by so many things that we forget that in times past, different parts of the world were much more similar than we think they were. I lived in Ukraine for a while, and sometimes I look at some of the Ukrainian dances, and I go to rural China, and I say, I can close my eyes, and I haven't moved. I'm 6,000 miles away, and yet it's not that different. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. One final question. As you think of the purpose of this conference, what do you hope would come out of something like this, us just getting together in the middle of, you know, rural America and now going to separate mission fields? You know, what are we doing here?
We have something precious. We understand simply but clearly that before God, we have no right to exist or survive for time and eternity. In short, we're sinners. At the same time, we understand and have embraced the gospel of Jesus Christ, which says that our sins are forgiven, we don't have to fear to live or to die, and our fulfillment in life is to share that with others. We have here at Bethany Lutheran College a wonderful tradition that has walked side by side with the Wisconsin Synod for over 100 years. And yet I'll tell you, because I've worked with them, ELS folks are not Wells folks. They have their own culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that all the people here together will reflect on the great challenge that we have in the world, the great tools that we have to put to use to get our work done, to employ them wisely, never forgetting that the central message is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Not me, but him. And that if this is communicated, God can even use a small group of Midwestern confessional Lutherans to make a big difference in whatever time left we have in this world.
Right. Exciting. John, thanks for your time. I look forward to hearing more of your insights the rest of the conference.
Thank you, John, for your time again, taking the time to first of all, come over to the States and spend some time at the conference. But as always, very, very insightful comments about work in mission fields.
That was one of the thrills of the conference for me, to get to sit and talk to Dr. Lorenz. He's quite the character and always has great things, great stories to share. And that's a lot of what he shared with us was common stories and reaching out and being honest with where you're coming from. And I just love that. So.
Yeah. That whole cultural thing is very interesting to me. And I think there's some application to even ministry in, you know, same culture settings where you're dealing with people coming from different walks of life, maybe even male, female, you know, dealing with kids and understanding where they're coming from and just all kinds of application. You really need to know people to be able to effectively communicate with them. And he brought that out in the interview. Sally, before we go to our last interview, maybe we ought to do our picks of the week. How about that?
Sounds like a great idea, Martin. But even before that, I wanted to make mention of, I wonder what our listeners are thinking of our brand new Wells Tech Studios featured in these interviews, or maybe not. But we did get to take advantage of the Bethany Media Arts Program and their studios they had set up. And that actually ties in with my pick of the week, because my pick of the week is called Stone Path Studios. And it's basically the Bethany students putting together and marketing their ability to create video content for the world. And they do it a lot for nonprofits and churches. And so if you're in the Mankato area, you may want to take advantage of the amazing resources they have there at Bethany. We were just really honored to get to sit in their studio, Martin, and be near all their fancy equipment. They have just about everything you could imagine in terms of camera equipment and green screens. We had the nice desks that we sat at and that kind of thing. They also have a fully loaded media truck so they can go on the road with it.
And that was impressive.
It was very impressive. And all of this is tied to the media arts program, as I mentioned, at Bethany, which is a major that they offer. We actually got to meet the faculty. There was a presentation done by Andy Overin and Kurt Paulson about their program and about many of the amazing media that's come out of their program. So I was quite impressed with what Bethany had to offer. It was wonderful to be there on their campus and allow them to showcase. We got to hear the director of their studio, Stephanie Earlson, speak about the program and about what they had to offer. And she was just as charming as could be and very enthusiastic about how they could assist churches and nonprofits and that kind of thing, put together some really high quality video. So excellent work coming out of Bethany, and kudos to them. And if you have a need, then I certainly recommend checking out their services.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that our paths cross paths with Stone Path in the future. There's, I think, some synergies there that we could take advantage of. They certainly have a passion to share the gospel, and the facilities that they have are very impressive. Even some of the folks that we often do video work with here, Betcher, Steve Betcher and Steve Zambo, were quite impressed with the setup, and Lee Hitter too, who worked at a major news channel, were quite impressed with the setup that they had there. So
we will include links to Stone Path and the Bethany Media Arts Program in the show notes. Stone Path also has a Facebook page and a Vimeo site, so you can see more of their work, maybe check out their demo video and that kind of thing. And Bethany Media Arts recently won an award for one of the videos produced by the students there called Leave Me Alone, which we got to see in the evening showcase. And so I can't resist putting a link to that as well. So
cool. Yeah.
Check out all the links in the show notes.
Nice pick, Sally. My pick is kind of related as well. One of the things that was presented in this the evening showcases, which were just as interesting as the workshops or the conference during the day, were just some presentations of what people were doing. So my pick, my actual pick is actually the video editor in YouTube, but maybe even before that, the thing that was shared at the conference was by Steve Zambo, who's making, I think, great use of a couple technologies and social media tools that we talk about all the time, that being Facebook and YouTube, and the ability to share the gospel through those social media tools. So Steve Zambo, who used to work here in the Senate office, has now a company called Salty Earth Pictures based in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. And they make Christian titles, and they've made some feature-length films, and they also do some short takes. And the thing that he shared with us was something that he's done in collaboration with Pastor Clark Schultz, who I saw just on Sunday at an installation of our new pastor. And what Clark does is he does movie reviews. So what Steve and Clark do, or they do a review, maybe once a month, something like that, or when a blockbuster comes out. Clark likes movies, and he's a pastor and has a Christian take on them. And he definitely has a style about him that is kind of fun to listen to. And so what they've done and what Steve does through Facebook is obviously advertise each video as they come up. But then they have a YouTube channel where they post all of the all these videos. And anybody can get a YouTube channel. It's not difficult. It's not difficult to do. It's not difficult to get movie or get video up there. And it makes sense, I think, for congregations, obviously, to put their video content in a channel where they can consistently refer to them. So they've got this archive of content, but they can also promote it through different social media channels, similar to what Salty Earth Pictures does with PC's Take, as it's called, through Facebook. And so my pick is kind of multifaceted. I ran across a good blog post too that talks about how to edit video on YouTube. So you don't need a lot of real sophisticated production tools to get video in a watchable fashion. So if you're just recording raw video and want to do some titles with it, or some lower thirds, or some transitions, or even stabilize the video, the YouTube video editor allows you to do that. So you've got basic clip management, so you can do trimming and cutting and slicing, the basic stuff. You can also, as we've talked about in the past with John Shuth Smith, you can also add closed captioning. Mm-hmm. You can add audio tracks. Like I said, you can add transitions and overlays, titling, lower thirds, those kinds of things. And then you can apply some enhancements as well, which would provide better lighting. You could enhance the video by allowing a steadier shot. So if it was a little bit shaky, it applies some technology to smooth that out. And all this comes free, and it's kind of a drag and drop interface. So really, any volunteer could pick this up pretty easily. And so you upload the video, and away you go, and then it's ready to be published. So just some free tools that congregations and schools can think about using. I think this could be used by students in a classroom, but I also think it could be used by congregations looking to put out videos of sermons or of other events, Bible classes, those kinds of things, in a really professional way, and it's not that hard to do. So really my pick is all of those, but the video editor on YouTube is the tool to get it all done.
I think our picks of the week is going to be the longest section of our show notes this week. We got lots to share. And those evening showcases were packed with great ideas. So I bet you'll hear more about it in future Wells Techs, because it was hard for us both to pick ideas from that to share. So
for sure.
Look for additional notes in the future.
So. Cool. So let's get to the last interview, Sally, and that was a couple. Jazz Longquist and Mike Klebig are members at Apostles Lutheran in San Jose, California. Uh-huh. And we've talked about some of the things that they've been doing in the past, although not specifically. We talked about a Hmong ministry effort to stream Hmong sermons. And they were very influential and, in fact, key to making all that happen, because what was used in that Minneapolis congregation really was what Jazz and Mike were doing in Apostles to allow their broadcast of their own services.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they are what they self-termed godly geeks. Uh-huh. They figured out a technology solution for their congregation, and they replicated it for the congregation in St. Paul so that the congregation in Sacramento could continue to have Hmong worship. This was all the way back in 2006, ancient history in technology terms, but Mike and Jazz haven't stopped there. They figure if they replicated it for one congregation, they could replicate the setup, teach other people how to do it in other ministry settings, specifically to this conference in world mission settings. So they kind of spec'd out a set of equipment, a camera, some microphones, computer, editing software, and are wanting to open this up to world missions, using that and producing their own content with the native speakers and being able to share it there in the countries where they work. So lots of enthusiasm behind that project and others that you'll hear Mike and Jess speak about.
Okay, so let's listen to them talk about their ministry and specifically how they dealt with the two challenge topics of the creative and the technology.
We're back at the Christ in Media Conference in Bethany, Mankato, and joining us for this session, Jazz Lundquist and Mike Klubig, who are presenters here as well, and were asked to react to a number of the challenges that were presented. You're from Apostles Lutheran in
San Jose, California.
Right. Okay.
Heart of Silicon Valley.
Right. And we've been aware of your work there in regard to streaming. Why don't you introduce yourselves a little bit and your streaming work there, especially to the Hmong community.
Do you want to get started with that?
Sure. I'm Jazz Lundquist, but also Mrs. Michael Klebig here. And I'm a screenwriter. That's my trade. I've been writing for 20 years for film, TV. I have a series on PBS right now, hundreds of videos, and lots of short films. Because we live in Silicon Valley, a lot of the topics are technology related, but that's how I make my living. And then we also, as volunteers, help run the studio at our church. So I'll let you.
Right. So I'm a field sales engineer in Silicon Valley, and I focus on the thing that's inside the what's inside. So, you know, Intel inside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm inside the Intel.
You're the bits and bytes.
I'm the bits and bytes
that's
inside.
That's how I explained his career to the children.
Sure.
Daddy
exactly.
makes the thing inside the thing inside the thing, but it's worked out very well for him.
That's right.
And so. And it's given some cool insights into global, well, because he works in the global semiconductor industry, it's given us a few insights. Although, interestingly, we work on in Silicon Valley, what you see is people are developing technology for the urban markets, people with a lot of money. There's not a lot of concern about backwards compatibility. You want to sell the next product the next year. And, of course, with missions, you kind of flip the coin, and it's been interesting. It's really been interesting hearing some ideas from the conference.
Yeah. So my contribution really with respect to the Apostles video streaming team is really more on the tech support side of things and more on a hobby basis for me because it's not my actual career.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been involved with the studio and tell us a little bit about your specific ministry in a cross-cultural setting to Hmong?
Well, we were aware that there was a situation in Sacramento, California where a Hmong pastor had a brain tumor, a serious brain abscess, and it really touched our hearts because the same brain abscess, we had the same experience with our daughter. She had the same condition. Okay. It was a very different situation in the case of my daughter because it was easily operable. In the case of this Hmong pastor, unfortunately, it was not. Mm-hmm. And in very short order, that pastor was no longer able to carry out his responsibilities at that church. And so this Hmong mission no longer had a pastor. And so the idea, actually, I think it was your idea.
Well, it was one of those things that came up because things were happening in different places. And that's what's so great about the conference, bringing people together. We had been streaming video from our church studio for about a year and a half at that time. We'd started in 2005, and that had started. We had a wedding videographer, Diane Lemke, and then I had my writing and producing background and thankfully married a geeky kind of guy who was able to help a lot technologically. So we'd been streaming for about a year and a half when the situation came up. We heard about it as a prayer request.
Yeah.
And it just troubled us so much because, thank God, by that time our daughter was fully recovered and back at UC Santa Barbara. This gentleman was disabled and unable to return to the ministry. And it was just such a burden on our heart to think of this beleaguered ministry, how much time. The first missionary to the Hmong was murdered. And he was one of the few men who'd risen up after that terrible tragedy and had gone through the arduous process of being educated and ordained, and to lose him just seemed devastating. And it, because our daughter had faced the same situation, it just troubled us. And then it was just one of those days in a conversation, why not stream? they can't have a pastor physically there, let's find one of the other pastors, and there were probably only three of them at that time, yeah. mm-hmm. that speaks the Hmong language, and let's provide that. Mm-hmm. And coincidences began to occur. We found that that there was no other Hmong-speaking ordained pastor in California, but there was someone in St. Paul. Well, coincidentally, our son Brian was here at Bethany studying for the ministry, and before he'd gone into the ministry, he'd done a radio, television, and film major. So we deployed him to St. Paul. We purchased the equipment and shipped it here. He took it to St. Paul and worked with volunteers from the Hmong congregation and taught them how to use the equipment.
Probably over about a six-week period of time, maybe? Six to 8 weeks is what it took.
Well, mm-hmm. meanwhile, you had the Sacramento congregation. Now, how will they view it? So Mike has always had a hobby of audiovisual, and so he found a video projection system for them. And coincidentally, we had another son who was an international relations major who was in school near Sacramento. And so he went and helped set up the projection system. And
taught everybody how to use it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a family affair.
Well, I don't want to, I wouldn't want our family, there were a lot of people who were involved, but it was, you can deploy your children pretty quickly.
And if they're in the right locations, yeah. excellent workers.
Yeah. I think it was really an example of the Holy Spirit meant to provide for these people. We did not speak the Hmong language. We had no history at all. There's a verse in Scripture, it was because of an illness I first preached to you. And that became to me sort of the motto mm-hmm. for the whole project. Mm-hmm. Because of our daughter's illness, because of Ning Lo's illness, we did figure out how to do this. And within a few months of them launching videos, analytics showed these videos in the Hmong language were being viewed in 9 countries.
Tremendous.
Not just in Sacramento,
yeah, all over
on the
world.
Internet.
Yeah, all over the world. U.S., Canada, Vietnam, Laos, China, the Philippines. It was amazing.
Yeah. It's a treat for us to get to talk to you because back in May, we interviewed someone from Emmanuel Hmong about the video process, and they told us about your story and how you provided that for him. So that's really neat.
Was that
Shuamua? It was.
He is incredible. You know, what was really exciting was that they had this one passionate volunteer, and I think he might have only been in high school when they got started. He really did amazing things for just being passionate about it. Mm-hmm. He learned to use the equipment, and about a year and a half or 2 years after they were streaming their sermons, the congregation was able to provide them with edit equipment, and they took over the ministry completely. And there was this bittersweet moment of just passing the torch and just feeling so privileged that...
We did the training DVD, and along with the training DVD, it was handed over, and they took over mm-hmm. completely, and that was the end of the launch of the baby there.
That's right. It was a bittersweet moment, and then it's, how can we clone this for more ministries?
So what does it take, you know, if a congregation is thinking, we really need to be doing this. We have maybe domestic ministries, but maybe cross-cultural ministries as well. It sounds complicated, and it sounds maybe a little scary for somebody who doesn't know AV or technology or isn't very creative. You guys have the package, and you have the, you know, maybe some of the resources that maybe other congregations don't. Is it tough to get into?
I think what's interesting at Apostles is, yes, it did start with some people who had some professional experience, and of course at Apostles we're blessed with our godly geeks, mm-hmm. and so that was enormously helpful, especially because even 6 years ago, streaming wasn't where it is now.
Right.
And so we had the professionals to launch it. However, we made sure that we created it in such a way that volunteers could carry it on, because if it's not sustainable. So we made a goal at Apostles that every single position would be 4 deep. And then just invited people, do you have any curiosity or interest? We started training. We knew it was sustainable when the earliest volunteers were training other volunteers. And so people should not be intimidated. This is an inexpensive and simple way. And, of course, technology has grown simpler and less expensive even since 2006.
Right. Interestingly, a lot of the volunteers that we have in the Apostles video streaming team are retirees. Mm-hmm. And we had some retirees that really didn't know how to use a computer. And so, you know, what you do is you create little opportunities for them to learn. You create processes, checklists, we call them. We use Yahoo groups and other means to keep these documents updated. Mm-hmm. And it's almost, you know, it's almost like a borrowing on activities that are used in business every, you know, every day. These documents are rev controlled, and you know, mm-hmm. people know, okay, we're working with the correct revision for this director checklist, and that has helped tremendously.
We created the checklists to be charts, where over here is the function. Here's what you need to do. But this third column on the right-hand side, you will find the on button on the left-hand side of the camera. It's green, and that way nobody needs to be intimidated. Mm-hmm. Then the other part of training was we would team people with an experienced volunteer until they felt comfortable. And some really beautiful friendships sprang up just from working together. But also, nobody had to be pushed too far outside their comfort zone. They just needed the willingness. Mm-hmm. And now you should see them. It's amazing. They make their own web promos and write scripts. And we just feel the more empowered people are, the better.
Awesome. So that first one was your baby. You got the Hmong streaming going. And now you're involved in more projects related to reaching out to the world. Can you tell us a little bit about the equipment and the process that you're involved with now?
Yes. Well, since we went through the effort of putting together this field production package or this video production package that we were sending to the Hmong, the idea was and the concept was, well, since we've done that, let's just take that same concept, bring it up, you know, 6 years later to more modern technology and really model, or I shouldn't say model, but base it on the initial production
package.
The successful model. So what's that going to take? Well, it's going to take the right kind of opportunity for mission work in the field that needs to be done locally, that is best done locally. And once that's identified, then why not do another training DVD for the people in the field if they need it? Mm-hmm. If they're very comfortable with the use of video editing and cameras and video editing and coding tools and how to distribute that either through Google or through other streaming methods, then you know it may not be necessary. But if it is, then we can do the same thing.
Yeah, and others too. The Mission Field Production Package we're hoping will be cloned in more ministries. What's mind-blowing, it costs less than $2,500. Now, we're not selling any equipment or anything like that. We are telling people where they can purchase it. And at that price point, it seems to me something even a small congregation could, on their own, equip a mission.
Even an individual.
Exactly, individual. What a beautiful bequest. Mm-hmm. Or something to do in honor of somebody. It's so affordable and it's much simpler to use than the technology even 6 years ago. So
absolutely,
we see it as something that can be easily purchased and easily implemented. It also means that that's going to be a native speaker in mm-hmm. front of the camera. They can have control over the ministry. It doesn't need intervention or the expensive shipping of materials or anything like that. And you can take that one native speaker and amplify the message to
the world.
Over the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So many people. I also right away saw, after seeing our son go through seminary and hearing about how difficult it was with the Hmong ministry to train those people in a language not their own, I also thought this Mission Field Production package has tremendous potential for ministerial training. Mm-hmm. And make those DVDs or those files available.
Sure.
So that was one equipment package, and then we thought, now we need to think about distribution.
Mm-hmm. You're right, and that's where the other package comes into play that we're working on. It's still in development. We've got a few bugs to iron out still, but we're calling it the Portable Media Distribution System. Mm-hmm. And it basically allows somebody in the field to go out, even if there's no electricity, if there's no power, they can go out and share the message with a little simple video projector, mm-hmm. a solar-powered battery, and that's it, just those two items.
Right. Paul Hartman had mentioned that that multi-language publications wanted a teaching center that they could take out and share the Bible stories and pictures. That is one of their projects on the publishing. And this could reach people who are illiterate, as Mike said, with no electricity. This little solar juice battery, it's so exciting.
They're amazing.
It weighs ounces, and it supplies power to devices for 12 hours.
Right.
And that plus the projector, which has 2 gigabytes of...
onboard memory, I think, and like 32 gig of
just a hair beyond the typical length of a Lutheran sermon.
That's correct.
Today,
that's true. Try to keep the messages down at the prescribed 17-minute mark. That would be really great.
But those two devices together weigh 2 pounds.
Right.
So you could easily carry them.
Carry in a backpack, on a bike, whatever.
And they cost less than $1,200. Yeah. Very exciting.
So you're a creative.
Yes.
And a screenwriter. Now, some people think, yeah, this is a great idea. They get the equipment, and then they say, now what? What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to create some original content in native-speaking, you know, scenarios. Where do they start?
I think you first would start with the messages that you're already using.
Your sermons.
So your sermon messages, your Sunday school classes, the things that you're already doing, and... For missions, they may also want to have some health education or something that
isn't culturally relevant.
Exactly, and maybe an attraction or English as a second language or something like that. So they should. The first thing that the team should do is simply begin recording what they're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of fancier projects and do they have the wherewithal? Maybe they do. But if not, they can tap into other creative resources like this fantastic facility here at Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible Stories and Pictures Project, there's actually, it's in the vein of a graphic novel, cartoon strips created decades ago.
Back in the 50s.
And so a graphic artist at in our congregation, but also an alum of Bethany, Steve Schneider, he went in and took out all the speech bubbles and added video moves to them, and that creates a foundational piece. And tonight we'll be showing a sample at the showcase with 3 different languages dropped in, English, Russian, and Spanish. And, of course, there are a few little challenges. Russian, for example, takes about 18% longer to speak, and so you have to extend. But there again, you're working in a digital medium, and it's just gotten so incredibly easy.
Right.
The other thing is that when they start with what they're already doing, if they want to expand beyond that, is not to have a concept where this is going to be some huge documentary. It can be little 2-minute, 3-minute clips,
right,
and just start there.
It's probably more appropriate to the attention span maybe
of most of us.
Right.
Yeah.
We do 30-second web promos. If there's an event at Apostles where we're inviting the community, we will do a web promo. We did a really cute one for the robotics camp that we just had at Apostles. And that got lots and lots of hits, and they actually had a really successful robotics camp way beyond their expectations. Yeah. So you can use these small pieces and still deliver big messages. Mm-hmm. Look at how the advertisers can pack big messages into
30 seconds, 60
and
seconds.
I do think there's some concern about the reductionism aspect of are you reducing a message down to a sound bite? But there are just so many additional opportunities that we get when we're working with in the digital world. I mean, the hypertext world.
We haven't even talked about going in that route yet with all the texting, SMS texting, and what that can do in lesser developed countries. Yeah. You know, huge numbers of people have feature phones. Something like,
I think
2012, I think it's 6 billion people worldwide.
Right.
Have access to phones, and it's projected to go to 9.5 billion in the next 4 years.
Right.
So, you know, some of those aren't smartphones. A lot of them aren't smartphones, but they're
text capable. Right.
And so, you know, some way to reach out to those people through even SMS texting on a regular routine basis.
And the cellular footprint is so vast compared even to where the internet reaches. It's something that's definitely on our radar. Cellular infrastructure is really growing right now. So we're just dipping our toe into that, but we're really curious about seeing what all there is to do with SMS, the short message service.
And it's not internet, so it's not regulated. You know, the great firewall, for an example, is not a situation.
Currently, it's inexpensive, and it's something to watch.
So back to creativity, we talked a lot about that in a recent session we had here at the conference. And one thing that kind of came out was the whole right brain side of things. And we call ourselves godly geeks, but we need those right brain people to, and we need to nurture that. How do you propose, or what ideas do you have about nurturing creativity in our circles, our Lutheran circles?
I think there have to be forums where people can connect and be encouraged and encourage one another. I think we also have to be careful. Somebody had touched on it in one of the panels earlier, but we need to let people first have their ideas be set free. Don't distinguish an idea, or extinguish, rather, an idea. Let it develop. Let a number of people think about it. And don't be quick to reject something because it's different. We Lutherans can be notorious for not wanting to change. But, yes. But I think we have an obligation to take the tools that are available and the gifts that God gave us and not be shy about using them. I think one of the biggest obstacles for creative people is they're too shy.
And
to share their work.
A lot of creative people are very, very private.
Right.
Yeah. I grew up in a media family, so there was no shyness about writing something and sharing it, but or giving a speech. My dad used to make us stand and give speeches. He was in radio. And so we didn't grow up with a shyness about that. At Apostles, the children play music in front of the congregation from a very early age. And they have no fear about, I would personally feel a little bit nervous playing an instrument in front of hundreds of people. So I think we need to provide opportunities early on. Mm-hmm. We need to let children's imaginations go free. I graduated from Luther High School, and I did have two teachers there that did encourage me in the field of writing. Someone had written on a paper, you have a God-given talent for the written word, don't neglect it. And another one had made copies of, if I finished my English teacher, if I finished an English test early, she would ask me to flip it and write poetry on the back. And she would make copies of all my poetry, and that what could be more encouraging than having that audience? So I think we need to encourage children. I think we need to provide forums for creative people to connect and encourage one another. And then I also think something that's been an encouragement in our volunteer group is seeing things get made. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people want to know about going to Hollywood and getting a film made. That is a very hard path. But in
nearly impossible.
It's difficult, certainly. But here, the students have access to seeing it all the way across the finish line. Mm-hmm. And with our volunteers, even at Apostles, once they've seen a couple projects across the finish line, now suddenly it's entered the realm of reality, and they know they can do it, and they're not going to be shy about the next idea. And we're just incredibly proud of the work that's coming out of people that had no idea they would ever be, or maybe they just, you know, this was a hobby, but now they're seeing it's really being a useful tool that's furthering God's kingdom.
Another thing I think that's really critical is for those volunteers, I mean, because that's what they are. These are not paid positions, is share the success stories. Mm-hmm. You know, when you hear about the person that is now a member because they saw a video on the Apostles' website, they first went there, and maybe for 2 or 3 weeks they watched a number of sermons they could do in the privacy of their own home to get a flavor for what's this Apostles all about. And then they come to church, and next thing you know, they go through the Bible information class and become a member.
Sure. What's been eye-opening for Sally and myself, I think, in the 4 years of this podcast is just talking to the breadth of talented people, both right brain and left brain people, you know, across the Synod who have that passion, like we definitely hear from you about the gospel, and then using whatever gifts you have, whether it be on one side of the brain or the other, or both, that says, oh, I have to do this. And I think you can't teach passion. But the other stuff can come along and support that. So Absolutely. We really appreciate the work that you're doing and really enjoy listening to you throughout this conference and looking forward to more of what you have to say. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us and helping spread the word.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jazz, Mike, for taking the time out of your busy schedules. You can see that they've got a lot of irons in the fire and a lot of creative ideas, Sally.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. Jazz is definitely a right-brainer in terms of creativity, and we can learn a lot from that and from their enthusiasm as well. So, yep.
So there'll be a couple things in the show notes that they talked about. A website or forum for creatives and for actually technical support, and a mission field production package as well that they referenced in the interview as mm-hmm. well. So our many thanks to Paul, John, Jazz, and Mike for their time and giving us our first real on-set experience. That was kind of fun, Sally.
Felt like I was on the Today Show with all the exciting setup we had there. So.
We should have hired some people to run outside the window and wear them.
So one more component of the conference I'd love to mention is the fact that the conference wasn't just a bunch of old folks. There were a lot of young, enthusiastic students involved in the conference as well, which was just great to see. At one point, one of the WLC students stood up and said, "Here we are. Let us do the work for you." She, in particular, was bilingual and mm-hmm. said, "You know, you've got the talent here, and we're eager to work." And one of the WLC professors came up with an idea and suggested that they do market analysis as a course at WLC or in conjunction with Bethany. To actually teach the students the marketing analysis kind of techniques where you go in and figure out what kind of media would appeal in a particular area and do that for our world mission setting. So I think that was a huge action item that came out of the conference, that these colleges are going to collaborate in that way to assist our mission efforts. Very exciting.
Yep, I really enjoyed it. Two other thank yous we probably should share, Sally. One to Steve Betcher of Betcher Trinkline, who did the video work there. You know, many of you maybe know Steve Betcher or his work. You definitely almost all know, and he's the Wells Connection. He's the man behind the Wells Connection and has been for many, many, many years. Mm-hmm. So our thanks to him and also to Lee Hitter, who organized all this and was our audio guy there as well. And so thanks to both of them, and they made us feel very comfortable, I think, in an uncomfortable situation for both of us. Unfamiliar.
Lee is our director of communications for those that don't recognize his name.
Yeah, and we've had him on the show.
We have.
Right? Yeah, yep. Not too long ago. So. Mm-hmm. Thanks to both of them. Sally, what are we doing next week?
Oh, exciting show coming up. We're looking at educational technology again. And our friend Jason Schmidt is going to be joining us, as well as John Dorn, who teaches in the Illinois Lutheran Schools, coming to us to tell us about his use of Edmodo this school year, a student Facebook-like environment where teachers and students can collaborate. And as if that wasn't exciting enough...
There's more.
There's a little twist to next week's show, and that is my partner's going to head to the other side of the world. Martin,
we thought Wisconsin to Minnesota just wasn't far enough apart. So we're going to get about as far apart as you can get next week. And I will be in Hong Kong at the Asia Lutheran Translators Conference, 13 hours difference between the two of us. So you'll be starting at, I think we're going to try and start at 7:30 next Tuesday. So those of you that like to follow the live broadcast, tune in at 7:30 Central. I think that's 8:30, whatever time zone I'm in, Hong Kong time, 8:30 that night.
Wow.
And I will be in the Asia Lutheran Seminary there in Hong Kong using their facilities as well. So cross our fingers and hope everything goes well. I have no worries. We'll figure it out. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be exciting.
Yeah, and you'll want to be a part of that. So make sure you tune in to next week's show. That's Tuesday, October 30th. That'll be live at 7:30 a.m.
All right. Let's close the show. We're coming up on Reformation, Sally. So we're going to, next couple of weeks, we're going to pick some Reformation hymns. And what better Reformation hymn is there than God's Word is Our Great Heritage, this time sung by one of our favorite Wells artists, Koine. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
God's Word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever to spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. Through life it guides our way, in death it is our stay. Lord, grant while worlds endure, we keep its teachings pure throughout all generations. On this boundless ocean, mighty billows roll. It's my hope in Jesus, the anchor of my soul. When trials of life surround me, the storms are gathering more. I rest upon His mercy and trust Him more. I reckon in Jesus, storms of life I'll breathe. I reckon in Jesus, I fear no wind or wave. I reckon in Jesus, He has power to set. I make it to the rack of ages. Keeps my soul from evil, gives me blessed peace. His voice filled the waters and made the wild wind cease. My pilot and deliverer, to Him I all confide. For always when I need Him, He's at my side. I make it in Jesus, stones in life I'll breath. I make it in Jesus, I feel no wind, no wind. I make it in Jesus, He has power to set. I make it to the rack of ages. He is my friend and savior, and in my anchor's cast. He drives away my sorrows and shields me from the blast. By faith I'm looking upward, beyond life's troubled sea. There I see a mansion prepared for me. I make it in Jesus, storms of life I'll breathe. I make it in Jesus, I fear no wind or wave. I make it in Jesus, He has power to save. I make it to the rock of ages. I make it in Jesus, storms of life I'll breathe. I make it in Jesus, I've been
time. If it worked, it worked.
Yeah, that was fine at that point. I had one fill that was a little, hey.